This is a Pinball News production.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for inviting me to Texas, where everything is really big. And I appreciate this year I'm not on Skype. And it's very cool. The show is bigger and bigger as everything is bigger in Texas. We're actually trying to find out if we can get some kind of Wi-Fi thing going, since that's linked to my phone right now. But I don't know if we will. If we're not successful with that, I guess everybody could crowd around my iPad in somebody's room somewhere, like they did before with that game, and figure out what's what. I just wanted to congratulate. I guess I'll stay up here for a minute. I made myself some notes, too. I wanted to congratulate the organizers of the show for really a great show. And last year I missed it. I was in Italy coming back, and I didn't want to miss it this year. I kind of started my week. I'll tell you about my week. You know, you'll have almost the next hour. I don't know if you have sound on that, Butch. You got something going on there. It's kind of distracting, but I don't know. See if you could get it to work. The Ravings of a Lunatic Mind. In a little bit, you'll hear from Butch. He'll take you through the manual of the game and some of the service part of it for those that got games. Anybody get a Wizard of Oz game yet? Well, thank God, because... know what? Oh, I don't have it. Okay. Who got it? All right, that's a lot more than last year, so that's good. Next year, everybody's hand will be up because they'll get some Hobbits by then and Wizard of Oz and all that good stuff. Where's Johnny Norman? Is he here? No? Good. He can't heckle me. This week, I started in Las Vegas at the nightclub and bar show, and I have some pictures to show you guys. And then I made my way to Chicago to our office in Streamwood. I saw the guys working on The Hobbit, so I'll have a little report on that. And I got to spend some time with Pat Lawler and Ted Estes, and I got to see his game too. And I'll tell you about those things. You know, it's been a long road, and everything in life is a risk. You take a chance. A lot of people ask me, you know, how I'm holding up, a lot of pressure and things like that. And really, this whole thing's taking a lot longer than anybody expected. And I appreciate everybody's patience, you know, but I guess the first year that Buick, I read something the other day that said the first year that Buick made cars, they built 37 vehicles. So I know that the mighty oak trees come from little acorns, and my dad says Rome wasn't built in a day. He typically says, you know, it was built at night. And it takes years to build up something, just like this show took a long time to build up. I knew, you know, I never regretted anything along the road. I knew that starting Jersey Jack Pinball would be a good idea. It's just that a lot of the things along the way, we had a lot of obstacles. We had failures. We had challenges. And a lot of the things that we did happened the way they happened. What happened, Butch? You good or no? You going to get that to play? You going to try it now? All right. I don't know what I do. So, you know, Jersey Jack Pinball was one of those things I knew it was a great idea at the time. And thank you for all the people that bought into it, believed in it, had patience for it, let us make great games. We knew we would never give up. We knew we would learn from our mistakes. I've said before, you know, you can't lose if you don't give up. And I'd rather try and fail than not try at all. But much more than that, I'd rather try and succeed, which is what we did. You don't want to fail, obviously. I guess there's no Wi-Fi in this room. That's the problem. There's no way to connect to the internet. So I'll have to do something about that next year, even though we have a hotspot. Yes? No sound? Buffering. I'll take it. All right. So since you got the Hobbit up there, let me go into the Hobbit for a second or two and talk about that. And how can I do this without... Okay. Let's see what happens here. It's the first time my magic iPad... All right. We'll take it like that. That's not really how I wanted it, but all right. All right. It doesn't look that way on here. That's really weird. Look how it looks on here. Okay. I'll take it. So we saw the layout of the Hobbit, and some of it's changed, and there are a lot of different things on the game now. The other day, let's see what happens when I do that. No? Come on. So I was playing the game the other day. That's Joe Balser, who designed the game, basically. They have a couple of Whitewoods that they're shooting in Streamwood, Illinois. And I really like this game, and I have to say that because I know I own the company, but if I didn't like the game, we wouldn't be building the game. So this is a lot different game than The Wizard of Oz. This is a huge strategy game, and one of the things I'll tell you, I wrote it on our group, the I.O. board that drives the game, in Wizard of Oz, there are 17 positions on the I.O. board that are not populated. On this game, we need all 17 drivers populated for everything that's happening on this game. So if you think about The Wizard of Oz and all that is, think that there are 17 more things that need to be driven on The Hobbit than The Wizard of Oz. Okay, so it's definitely not less game. A lot of people said, well, you know, Wizard of Oz is this great game. You'll never do that again. You'll never make as good a game. The idea was with Wizard of Oz, the team was... they were motivated to build the greatest pinball machine ever. And that was their motivation. And the Hobbit team, many of the same members, their motivation is Wizard of Oz is going to be the worst game we ever built. Okay? So that's the idea behind this. So moving on and making things happen. JP is still doing the animation. You saw some of that. There's a lot of animation right now and artwork that's still pending through Warner Brothers. And we'll show more of that probably in the next few weeks as we go along. And let me go to another one of these that are pulled up. Let's see. Okay. So there are the guys. That's Jim and Matt. Matt is still sculpting toys for this game. There's going to be, you know, obviously Smaug is a very critical part of the game. And he's going to interact with the ball in a couple of different ways. And he's going to be in a mountain, and it's going to be pretty cool. That's on the left side of the playfield. And it's not that they wouldn't let me take pictures. I didn't take a lot of pictures. I was going to take pictures of the Whitewood flipping, which is kind of cool. I may show something like that in a week or two, three, something like that. But it shot really well. It's a strategy game. So there's a lot of things coming up and going down, and you have a lot of control over where the ball goes. You have more than two controls on each side of the game that you can interact with the game play and the ball. So you have things happening under the play field, you have things happening above the play field. How much more vague could I really be and tell you something? I don't know, but I'm trying. So Joe is really excited about this game. I mean, we're all excited about the game, but Joe is really excited about the game. Because this is a departure from what he did on Wizard of Oz. And you still have the team of Keith Johnson and Ted Estes doing the software on The Hobbit. So we know we released 3.0 software on Wizard of Oz. Basically, the game is finished now, okay? It's extremely deep. There's a lot going on with that game to be discovered. What you'll find is that we probably will have... maybe some fixes or some other minor updates, you know, coming when Keith or Ted think that's necessary. But basically, the game is finished. You know, they have to work on The Hobbit. So if we keep working on Wizard of Oz, we're going to have the same problem happen with The Hobbit, where we're running back and back and back. And we can only get away with that trick one time. So the other day, I went to Pat's place. It's the building we used to rent from him. And he's really a happy guy right now. I don't know, many of you have seen Pat over the years, and you've heard him say things that were positive and some things that were alarming. You know, But Pat today is very excited. He's very engaged. He's very motivated. He's very positive. And he's like a little kid because he gets to make a game without basically any interference on our platform from his mind. So if he can imagine it, he can create it. And I saw the game that he's doing because I haven't seen him in a few months. I haven't been out there. And, I'm not quite sure. Honestly, I thought it was a standard size game, but I saw two different versions of it, and I'm not sure right now what it is, to be honest with you. It could be a wide body. It could be a standard game. So I know that sounds kind of interesting, but he's got a lot of stuff going on this game, and we're going to see what it evolves into in the next few weeks. But and the other thing about Pat, it was kind of cool. I got to go to his house. You know, he's got like all these number one games that he did, and I got to spend some time with him. And I have to say this: I understand that I own a pinball company, and I understand that's pretty cool. I never thought in my 39 years in the industry that I would actually own a pinball company. It really wasn't not a dream of mine. It was something that I wound up doing because all I wanted to do was have a company that made really great games for you guys. And for me to be with Pat the other day, and this kind of happened with Joe too when Joe first came into the company, but to be with Pat the other day and spend time with him and hear his explanation, and as he walked me through every inch of the playfield that he designed and all the ramps and all the toys and what everything would do, I'm just there with Pat, and I'm saying to myself, as an operator, I remember opening up Whirlwind, and I remember opening up Funhouse, and I remember unboxing Adam's Family. And the guy was my hero because he made games that I put on the route that made me money and made you guys play pinball. And this guy is working for me right now. And I stood there for a second, right, Martin? I mean, I stood there for a little bit looking at him. You know, he had crazy eyes explaining to me everything about the game. And I said, holy crap, this guy, to me, is the greatest pinball designer ever. Now, it's not to take away anything from anybody else, certainly, okay? But if you go based on 22,000 plus Adams families, and you go based on original games that he created, there's nobody better than him. I mean, absolutely, I want him on our team. And how Pat came to us was kind of simple. You know, everybody might know the story. We rented his building, in March of 2000. I guess, geez, what year was it? 2011. So we rented his building in March of 2011 up in northern Illinois. And the day that I was getting the key, I met Pat at GameWorks in Schaumburg. And we had lunch together. And it was kind of a secret that I was meeting Pat because, you know, where are we going to rent this building? And we don't want people tapping on the windows and finding us and that kind of stuff. So I meet Pat, and we're having lunch, and we're talking about pinball. And he says to me, do you want some advice? Sure. Yeah, the great Pat Lawler is going to give me some advice. So, okay, sure. So he looks at me, and I repeated this story with him and all the group the other day, and everybody was laughing. So he said to me, you know, you're going to be building your first game. You're going to have a lot of hard times. You're going to have a lot of difficulties. You're going to have failures. You're going to have obstacles that you can't overcome or are going to be very difficult to overcome. What you should do is just make your game this much better than the other guy. Nobody's going to expect much from you. If you make the game, it's going to be an accomplishment. You really don't have to make Funhouse on your first game. And, you know, yeah, I'm Jersey Jack, but I'm from Brooklyn, right? I'm a Brooklyn street operator. So when there's some pushback to me, I pushed back the other way, and I just said it. It was idiotic what I said to Pat. I remember I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, Pat, you know, no disrespect. The guys can't be aiming at mediocrity. They can't build something that's just a little bit better than what's out there. We're going to fail that way. We have to believe we're building the greatest pinball machine ever. Whether or not that's really true, we need to believe that right now. And we're going to make a game that makes Funhouse look like Humpty Dumpty. So, you know, Pat looked at me just like you guys thought right now. But remember, he looked at me. There was no Wizard of Oz game, obviously. There was no factory. There were no people. There was nothing. And he looked at me, and that look told me like $1 million. The look was, this guy's an idiot. He is an idiot. Okay? There is no way in the world this guy is going to, there's no way. He just thinks it's going to happen because he wills it. So, but you know what? Right now, I want the rent check he's going to give me, and I want to give him the key, so I'm just going to shut up. Okay? And that was the funny part of that story that happened that day in March of 2011. Pat came to Jersey Jack Pinball this way because he sees what we did and better than what we did, what we can do. Because we can do, you know, Wizard of Oz is great, and I'll never say it's a bad game. But, you know, if I want to believe that it's the worst game we'll ever build, then, you know, game two and game three and game four, game five, you're going to get better and better. Because as a company manufactures a product, you hope that they get better. You hope they don't put the first game or the first product out there, and that's the best they're going to do, and they go downhill from there. So having Pat come to the company was a big validation of the future of the company and what he could do on our platform and the fact that he wants to build games not only for home customers, hobby people, operators, everybody. We want to build games for everybody. That's our target audience, is everybody. You know, expand the player base, which is what I wanted to do at Wizard of Oz. You know, again, I've been asked at this show, other shows years ago, why'd you pick Wizard of Oz? I think now if anybody really asked me that, it's kind of obvious. You know, there's a redemption company that licensed the Wizard of Oz after they told me it was a bad theme. There's a Facebook game now based on the Wizard of Oz that was licensed by an old pinball guy. So I guess he must think Wizard of Oz is a good theme. Hobbit is a good theme. Pat's game's going to be great. His idea that he has. Game number four, game number five, that are just starting to get on the drawing board now. You know, that's what we're aiming at, okay? If I go back to the beginning of this quick before I go to Butch. So, you know, there's the front of the building. Most people have seen the building, you know, the front of it. You know, we have a 42,000 square foot building in beautiful Lakewood, New Jersey. That's one of the internal cameras that sometimes I roll over at 5 in the morning and I see a lot of games in the line there in the dark with all the lights on, and this might be, you know, what's going on any given day. That's the final test line. And we have people come to the building every day. You know, there are just people unannounced come to the building, ring the bell and say, hi, you know, can we get a tour? Can we come in? Can we this? And everybody comes in. Nobody's turned away, no matter what we're doing. We have nothing to hide. This is always a good sight. I like to see that, you know. Games ready to go. We've loaded containers to Australia. We've loaded containers to Europe already. a lot of games leaving the building. Guys in final test, imagine your job is that you get paid to test pinball machines. Okay, that's your job. Every day, all day, you have to wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, go in the shower, get dressed, go to work, and your job is to... Well, Steve, I hope Steve doesn't listen to this on... because you're a big... Yeah, exactly. So your job is to test pinball machines. I mean, like, really? You know, like, there was a Far Side cartoon years ago where everybody knows Far Side, right? So I remember the parents, it's on my desk somewhere, and the parents used to see their kid playing video games on the floor, and they would think this bubble, this thought bubble over their head was, you know, career, you know, Nintendo expert wanted, pay $200,000 a year, or anybody apply, but this is a real thing. And that's some of the group that's there in final test and operations. So this was a shot from yesterday and here. So every show that we go to, people are piled around the Wizard of Oz game. And again, we were at the nightclub and bar show, which I guess I'll get to later in this. So nightclub and bar show. This is one of our customers, Brad Birdsall. Brad has 5 restaurants in Las Vegas. He's a big pinhead. He introduced this really cool Bloody Mary mix, and he wanted to put games in his booth at the nightclub and bar show. So rather this year than go to the amusement show, which was going on at the same time, instead we put our resources in nightclub and bar. We sold a bunch of different games to operators as well as bar owners directly, and it was a worthwhile show to go to for us. And, you know, people when they... that's Charlie from Joysticks. I don't know if any of you know him. I think he's from Texas, right? So, yeah, I know. The other Texas. So he was there, and he was kind of happy. And what happens at nightclub and bar show is that people have a lot to drink, and they feel really good. And this lady had, like, 2 Toto dogs in a basket. And, it was kind of crazy what she had going on. People also said to me that The Wizard of Oz was one of these themes that, you know, it's not really a theme for real hardcore pinball players, or, you know, it's not something cool. So Slash is one of our customers. He's a big supporter of our company, and he loves pinball, as we know, from Guns N' Roses, that pinball machine, and that's just a shot of him. We have all kinds of customers just like you guys in every walk of life. This is Mitch Album, the author, who on Christmas Eve, he signed the book for me, and he wrote to me, which is kind of cool, to Jersey Jack, thanks for so many hours of fun in the pinball galaxy. Hope you like my work half as much as I do yours. Mitch Album. So you get things like that. You know, people bake us cookies, and they send us all kinds of things shaped like the Jersey Jack logo, and they send us cakes like the Yellow Brick Road, and, you know, it's wonderful. You know, I've been able to actually take a little bit of a victory lap around now that more games are shipping and more of the problems are behind us, and everybody's feeling great. I don't know if any of you saw this guy around. Ed, are you here? Okay, so Ed's around. He's from Bare Naked Ladies. He's running around the show. This is his first pinball show. So if you bump into him, just tell him how great you love pinball. But he's a big Jersey Jack supporter, and he's a big pinball supporter. We've had a lot of people come to our building. We've had the Wall Street Journal. We have Fortune Magazine. We've been on the front page of AOL. We've a lot of press about what we're doing. It's really a distraction, to be honest with you, because I don't really look for it. We have had 5 or 6 different producers ask us about doing a reality show. Everything in Jersey is something. Every single show, they want my wife in the show, and they want my daughter in the show, and they want some conflict. They want somebody yelling at somebody and that. We don't do a lot of that. You know, that might happen at other pinball companies, but now a company, it's more of a family. We're more respectful. It's a lot of kumbaya. You know, there's some arguing and things like that when parts come in bent like that, when they're supposed to come in like that. And, yeah. This is the guy from, what is that, King of Kong? I think that was, I forgot his name, this dude here from King of Kong when he was doing that movie, right? I don't know how that happened. That's pretty good. That's another effect. I think at this point what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over. We'll take some questions, and then I'll turn it over to Butch. And then in 15 minutes, I'm gonna, you know, you get your auction. So I'll take some questions if anybody has any questions. Good. Nobody. All right. Everybody okay? Good. Okay.
When do you think you'll complete the LEs?
We have a little bit more than 200 LEs left. You know, I said 90 days-ish. I wonder when that's from, but it's these next several weeks that they'll be gone. You know, part of the problem again, you know, you ordered a hamburger from me. I really don't want to tell you how the cow got killed. You know, but in our business, you know, part of it is that a lot of people, you know, ordered games and they're waiting. So the only thing I have to say about people that are still waiting for games is that you don't have any childhood diseases in your game. You know, any light issues, any power supply issues, cabinets, things like that. So the benefit for waiting longer is that you have a game that, you know, is the final game. You know, that's, you know, and... But you know, believe me, I'm not trying to do anything to hold games back. You know, it's a complicated thing. It's related to vendors and supply and people making things for us. And, you know, when you have 4,000-plus parts, you know, I don't want to be like the other guy, you know, and tell you, it's really tough building a pinball machine. Come on in, the water is cold, you know. So you heard all of that crap before, you know. So for me, you're not getting any excuses, you know. We're doing the best we can. It's a new company. We're going to make sure, you know, I don't run away from the fire when the fire is burning. I run into the house and pull people out of it. I take the bullet for the company. It's my company 100%. People that work for me, they don't need all the grief. You know, Jen or, you know, Ken or any of the guys. You know, I answer my phone 24 hours a day almost. I answer emails. Most of you know that. So, you know, this is what's enabled us to have transparency and trust and confidence. Can I tell you every single thing about the company? No, I'd like to, but you know, in as much as possible, we're doing everything we can to make that happen. So, long answer, but if you're waiting for a game, right? All right. So here's what happens sometimes with people waiting for games. I get phone calls and somebody says, "There's a wedding. There's an anniversary. I need it by a date. I need to do this. I need to do that." Sometimes we've been able to move people around, but that gets other people pissed off. So trying to make everybody happy, we make nobody happy. But we're working on your game. See me after this class, and I want to talk to you.
Yes.
Yes.
What's the current schedule, SPS, whatever it is, on shipping Hobbit?
So we want to be shipping the Hobbit when the movie comes out. That was the plan. That's what we're obligated to do contractually. So we want to be building games, shipping them, and... we believe right now that we can do that. You know, we believe we're on track to do that.
Does that mean, like, okay, the first one is out the door, so we checked it off? Or is that, okay, we're really, the line is moving by time the...
Well, I don't want to start building them in a whimper. We want to start building them in a bang, right? So, you know, with Wizard of Oz, we were kind of stuck waiting for different things. And we started getting games out, but I don't expect that to happen. You know, in my... world of what I would hope to see, I would hope to see that you know, a substantial amount of games get shipped in the beginning. You know, I would love to build X amount of games and hang on to them and then ship a whole load at one time. You know, but there's a disadvantage to that too, because let's say you build games and they have some kind of issues and you shipped 100 games at a time, all right, and now you got 100 issues. So the Hobbit, think about this, all right? So, again, I'm not going to talk about the difficulty of doing this, but we had to create a coin door on our game because it has an audio board. So HAP makes that coin door because it's different. It's proprietary to us. So they told us it would take, like, maybe 2 months to make the door. It took, like, 9 months to make that door. The soundboard with Pinnovators, they're great guys. But we thought it would be 4 or 5 months to make the soundboard because we have 2.1 audio. You know, we didn't make a game in mono. We were told it would be like 4 or 5 months to do that. It was 11 months to make the audio board in the game. The unified power supply, we thought it would be 6 or 7 months. It was 14 months to make that. Guess what? We don't have to make a coin door or unified power supply, you know, audio boards, all those things. We don't have to do that again on the second game. We'll have trouble with the second game, but the trouble's going to be this. So look... if you went through something and what didn't kill you made you stronger, right now I could lift up this entire building, okay? Throw any damn thing at me, I don't really care, okay? Because if we created the company and the game and that building and everything else and we're still here when everybody told me, you're not going to create the company. You're never going to sell the games. You're never going to get the money for them. You're never going to design it. You're never going to build it. You're never going to ship it. It's never going to work. It's never going to make money. Bullshit. Okay? Bullshit. It all happened, didn't it? So if you did all of that, tell me that where we're going is going to be harder than where we came from. No, it's not. We all know that. So we've been over the hardest time. It's done with. Okay? The people that write stuff on news groups and stuff like that, they're all experts because they never did anything. I'll tell you what I really think. So really, look, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I respect their opinion, you know that. If I go on one of those groups and I start writing, you walk into the middle of a bar fight, right? You're going to get punched from both sides. Doesn't matter who's right or wrong. Before I know it, Robin is calling me. He's ending a thread. He's banning people. Somebody put pictures up of a girl in maybe not the right amount of clothing, let's say. Okay? You know, listen, I'm sure that the stamp collecting group, I'm sure that the car enthusiasts, I'm sure that the coin collecting guys, they all got all of these same people. They just have different names. If you love pinball, how could you be upset that there's more pinball companies making pinball machines? I wish there was 50 companies making pinball machines. And let me tell you something. The Predator guys and John Papaduke that's working on 12 games at a time, God bless him. I just heard today he's working on a game with Rick, right? So John is like, you know, Rick, what's his name, was the hottest guy in show business. Who was that guy? That guy died, right? James Brown. Wah-ha! He was the hottest guy, working guy in show business. John Papaduke is the hottest working guy in pinball. Okay, so you got him, you got the Predator guys, you got Andy Highway, you got the spooky, kooky guys, you got whoever, P-Rock or whatever, you know, all those guys. I have respect for them. I'm not going to say to them, come on in, the water is cold. Okay? They're doing their thing. Let them build their games. I got news for you. If I could help any one of them build their games, let any one of them come to me, and if I can help them, I'll help them build their games. All right? Because guess what? We have a factory. And, you know, getting the game approved alone for Intertech, which was there, UL, FCC, guess what? 60 grand took us 3 months, something like that. If that game goes in your basement and your house burns to the ground, okay, we're covered for that. Other people build stuff as a hobby. I don't know what happens if your house burns to the ground. Maybe they're going to be working for you the rest of your life. It's not a hobby anymore when you take money. It's a business. See, as an electronics technician, there's a logical side of me that says, don't do that because you're going to get hurt. But guess what? The entrepreneur in me says, do it. Do it. And thankfully, I had all of you people that believed in me first that enabled us to do this. So let me give this to Butch. You got about 15 minutes because the auction is going to start late because they let us start like 10 or 12 minutes late too. So we're going to run about 10 or 15 minutes late.
Test, test. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Great.
The Texas Pinball Festival has always been a real special place for me. It's been one of my favorite shows. I've been here 6-7 years running now. These guys do a great job. If you haven't taken time to take just a second and say to one of these ladies that's running around, one of these guys, like a chicken with their head cut off, you know, stop and shake their hand and tell them what a great job they do, because this is really a terrific show. It's more special for me as I met Jack in 2011. I listened to his presentation. In 2012, he called me out of the crowd. Where's Butch Peel? That guy's going to be working for me. In 2013, I'm here doing a presentation representing the Jersey Jack Pinball Company. And now here I am with Jack himself. So, you know, it's a really special place for me. I enjoy coming here every year. And these guys do a great job. There's a heck of a lot of games out there. I've been to a lot of different shows around the country now that I work for Jack. And this show is definitely one of the largest if you like to just play pinball. And I usually start when I talk to people with the three words that I just love pinball, everything about it. I love talking to people about pinball. I love restoring pinball games. I love playing. I love watching other people play. I love talking to people about it. There's just nothing about pinball that doesn't make my heart race and get, you know, the blood pumping, because I just really enjoy it. So I'm living the dream up here working for Jack. I don't know what it is I said to him. He still won't tell me that made him hire me to begin with, but I came up with the little slogan that's on there. Maybe that's my one claim to fame, my 15 minutes of fame, right? Jack of all trades, master of fun. Came up with that on the Wizard of Oz group.
We're still paying your royalties on that.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think that check's gotten here. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Wizard of Oz menu system and diagnostics and a little bit of stuff about how the game works. And Jack's going to interrupt me because I got way too much material for the time that I've been given, for sure.
Actually, we're gonna wind up doing a service seminar and an operator seminar at some point, you know, when there's enough games out there, probably in the next show or two after this.
So a lot of you, you know, who doesn't have a Wizard of Oz game? I mean, there's a lot of us, right? And you play it for the first time out here. You see it. You don't get to see under the hood. You don't see the back end. Every time, without fail, you know, I just hear the breath when I lift a play field up in one of these games, or I feel that, what's wrong with it now? You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm showing it to somebody. Somebody wanted to take a couple of pictures. Yeah. Pinball guys are great, but boy, the first time I ever opened one of those up, I mean, I never seen so many cell phones around my head, and everybody was trying to take a picture. It's kind of like the guys with the Medieval Madness over here this afternoon. So, well, when you open the coin door up, you got your buttons that everybody's familiar with. You also have an interlock switch here. There's two of them in place. One tells you that the coin door's open and closed. The other one actually shuts off the power to the high power coils, and that shouldn't be anything surprising to people that worked on Williams and Bally games. So you just pop this little button out, and then you're in business to test all the coils and all. But beware, fingers actuate coils just as well as balls do. So your main menu, we have tests and settings, reports, audits, install presets, utilities. People that have the game, bear with me here. I'll get to some stuff that will be interesting to you, I promise. Install presets. If you go into all those different settings and look for what's the easiest or the hardest and different types of settings, it would take you all day long, literally. There are so many ways. And this game is so flexible and so optioned out that you can change the way it plays to suit you. I got used to the no place like home not being timed. I really like that. So my game, I'm able to shut that off in the settings and say, I don't want it timed. I want it to, you play as long as your ball is still in play. And, you know, my wife claps. She loves to do that too. She hates the timer thing. It makes her so nervous she can't make a shot. We all feel that. But you can run through and optimize, change this game, personalize it however you like it, for making more money on route or for just making it more fun for you and the kids. But you could go through literally all day long and try and find how to make it kind of medium hard or someone really easy. You can go into presets and you can just install all kinds of preset where it goes in, sets a bunch of different settings with one push of the button and changes your game from super easy when your kids are playing it to extra super hard when you come to it. Resets menu, very simple again, and I'm going to just brush right over these, but you can reset your high scores, you can clear your audits, you can go to factory settings, factory resets, those sorts of things. Utility, this is where we do our USB updates. You can put in a custom message, a la the old Williams Bally games, set your clock, get some hardware information, do a burn-in if you're wanting to test something. Settings menus here, there's five of them total under the settings, system settings, a pricing, a game settings, a coil settings, and a high score. I'm going to hit these ones with the asterisks a little bit more. But pricing settings basically lets you go in and change setting by setting and what pulse means, what kind of something this, and what kind of coinage you're using, what country your game's set up in, all those kinds of things. High score settings, pretty straightforward. You can change your default high scores that you can then change with a push of a button. System settings, these are some of the game type settings, you know, three balls instead of five balls. Default, Keith turns I've always disagreed with that with Keith, with turning the ball save time to off. You know, we're not all Keith Johnson. We can't play that well. So somebody walks up there and drains the ball, didn't even see it coming out of the pop bumpers the first time. It's a rough lesson. So I like to set them around 9, 10 seconds and let somebody play if a ball drains for any reason. Auto launch, timeout. You know, if you don't like that ball kicking, you just want to sit in the lane, wait for you to actually launch it. You can turn that on and off. You got competition modes. You can adjust the. That's a very similar setting to the Williams. The games restart where if you're playing and you're in the middle of a really good game, you don't want your little 3-year-old come up there and what's this glowing button do and start a whole new game. It's very frustrating. So you can turn that off. You can do all kinds of things. LED brightness. You know, some people say the LEDs are just too bright in this thing. It just blinds me. You know, I play in the dark. I want it to be dimmer. Well, there's a setting for changing it to a lower setting or bringing it up brighter if you're in a bright room. Tilt warnings, extra balls, how many can be stacked. Sounds, whether you want your music, the Jersey Jack riff, playing in between when you're sitting in a track mode. You can replay awards. This is similar to the old Williams. They had a setting for fixed or auto replay. Ours, we actually split those up. So we have a replay awards that handles the auto portion of what Williams used to do, and then we have what we call score awards that handles the more fixed portion. So you can set specific thresholds, define those, and then you can put a boost on either the replay or the score awards. And then if they're surpassed for, you know, until someone puts more money in the game or whatever, it'll momentarily bring them up so that it's not so easy to just keep racking up free games. Game settings. This is, again, I would just, every time I get a new software thing, I go right to the menus. I don't even start playing. I just want to see what I can adjust now because it's exciting to see all the different things you can do in these settings. You could change difficulty levels for any single portion. If you think it's too easy, you can bump it up a little. If you think it's too hard, you can make it a little easier. If you just want to be able to try without the glass off and actually using the flippers to get to some of these things, you can set them a little easier and see some really cool stuff that you never seen before. You know, twister, the house, how many times it needs to spin to start a munchkin mode, how often that difficulty increases. I mean, I've been working with this stuff really closely over the last 2 weeks or so because I'm trying to finish up the manual, which is almost just 350 pages now. It's hard to believe. But when I write this up, I'm actually going through it each step by step like the old Williams manuals did and trying to provide you a little information on what your limits are there, the minimum, maximum for all these things, what hard means, what mode means, what things like that. So it is exciting to see all the different things. It's a little difficult to understand given the small amount of space on a screen like this, so I'm trying to put a little more narrative in the manual so you can use it side by side with your menus. Coil settings. This is just really cool. Just in this game out here, when it comes out of the box, it's tested at the factory. It gets shipped from New Jersey all the way to Texas. Things are bouncing around. Some of the coil things might get a little loose. Something sits and settles where it was, you know, wasn't quite as tight as it was at the factory. Whatever it is, when you play it in your place, that flipper on that castle seems to be weak to me. I can go in here. I can just pop the coin door open, and I can try it right there. I can put in another setting. I can just set a ball up in there and just try it a few times. You know, you could do all kinds of things once you enable the high-power coils. So that's another thing that's really cool about our diagnostic system is all the high-power coils are actually the switch-triggered coils are going to be switch-triggered when you're sitting there in the game. So you can take the diagnostics, open things up, pull the glass off, and you can pound on the play field, see if you've got a switch that's making it's too sensitive. You can see if this VUC over here is causing some other switch to actuate that's set too sensitive nearby by just drop a ball in there. It'll kick the ball out. Put it in the shooter lane. It'll auto-launch for you. It'll show, you know, pop bumpers. Everything, and the flipper buttons are active so that you can activate flippers if you want to see what those do to switches and all. But just being able to control every single aspect of the game. I mean, you can control where this ball's kicking to, how strong that is, how easy it is to spin the house. Everything is right here in coil settings. So anybody know what this little guy is? Anybody? Other than this guy in the front row. What? A switch adjuster. Yes, that's good. Now, can you get the follow-up question? What are these? Right, those are not switch adjusters, okay? So you start using these kind of things on switches, you're asking for trouble. That little guy in the middle is what you need to be using, and you need to use it. He liked that slide. I really got him sitting on the edge of his seat when I showed it to him first time. Standing there? Okay, here I am. It's like talking to all of you guys and doing some. Starting over here. Up here? Okay. I know, I'm burning here, I'm burning. So, switch adjusters, what kind of switches are you going to be able to adjust? There's some switches in this game that are adjustable, there are some that are not so adjustable. Here's what we got in terms of adjustable switches. You got all these different, there's like a ramp-made switch that's up on the Emerald City ramp. This is for the crystal ball spinner. These are used behind the witch front plates for that rubber thing to score witch hits. This is used for the drop target reset to let you know the drop target's down. Virtually every rollover in the game, save the one behind the single door on the castle. Why do I know these things? Because I wrote the manual. Yeah, exactly. And then your ball launch switch there. The tilt mechanism is a switch. It's got a wire connected to this and a wire connected to that. And then when that thing makes contact, it actually trips a switch. It's a dedicated switch. Flipper switches in the cabinet. You got end-of-stroke switches on the flippers themselves. Sling switches, rollover switches, pop bumper switches, stand-up switches, target switches. These are all adjustable with that little tool. You don't want to use any of those, you know, pipe wrenches and things like that on them. For the most part, when you're going to work on a switch, a long blade like this, the last thing you want to do is go about right there and bend it one direction or the other. You want to make your bend back near the end here where the actual little switch is. One little bend right there and that whole arm will come up here. Not so dramatic, obviously, but you're going to do it a little at a time. And that will make less pressure to this end, cause that switch to actuate. You do not want to make this look like it's somebody been chewing on it. And you don't want to turn this switch into that switch, basically, which is what happens. When you're using leaf switches, pop bumper switches, the long actuators, you want to work on the side that's away from the ball, and or the side that's away from where the ball is hitting something else and actuating the switch. So on an end of stroke switch, you're gonna work on this blade back here, and you're gonna get it closer or further away. On a pop bumper switch, you're gonna work on the one on the bottom because this spoon is what actually actuates it. So, and you want to bend again right here. You don't want to take it and crank it right there and now take your two faces that met each other nice and flush before. Oh, that's nice. Nice and flush before. Now one of them's turned and you're not making good contact. These switches don't work, your game doesn't work. That's what basically is going to happen. Opto switches. I think you all pretty much know how optos work. You got the dark one is the photo transistor, and you got an LED on the other side. This one's constantly shining a light right in that one's eye. Whenever something goes in front of it, this thing says, hey, nothing's shining in my eye right now, changes the voltage across it, and then tells the computer, hey, a switch was just made. Because the only thing that should come between those in a game should be a pinball, hopefully. So in our lock, we have three sets of those. So you have photo transistors on one side, you have LEDs on the other, and this one just shines in that one, and then it's made or break that way. So when we have our switches here in a minute, there's what we call normally open and normally closed. So there's a different kind of connotation when it comes to opto switches. Sometimes the optos are so small that the transmitter receiver are then put in either side of what we call a U-shaped opto. And here's how it's used in our witch mechanism. This is our lock mechanism up on the ramp. This is one of the orbit enters. So at the bottom side of the orbits, this is how a U-shaped opto is used in the house spinning mech. Pop bumper switches. Like I was saying, you got the pop bumper sitting here. The skirt comes clear through the play field and sits in that cup. You want it to sit in the exact center of the cup. You got big old oblong holes here so you can loosen the screws. Move this whole thing around so that sits right in the bottom of that cup. That will make that the most sensitive to any direction a ball running into that. Then you make sure this leg of the switch is up against that, so there's no gap in between the plastic here and that there, that will make your pop bumper just as dead as can be because it takes too much spoon movement to actually make the switch make. So what you're going to adjust is this one right here. And you can just bend this guy, again, way back here, take your switch adjuster, bring that up where it's really tight, and you'll have really good pop bumper action. Slingshots, same way. Got a switch back behind here that's going to make. This is showing the how the thing actually kicks. You've got a stabilizer on one side, and you've got the rubber holding it on the other side. So when the rubber is moved in, i.e. by the ball, then it's going to hit one of these. The contacts are going to make, and you want to adjust this side of the switch, not the long. You don't want to take and bend that on an angle or something like that. You want that to be as straight as it'll bow a little bit because it has some tension on it. But you want to make sure that you keep it far enough away that you test it, and that's how you do in diagnostic. Take a ball and actually roll it. Don't use your finger because it's not realistic. Take a ball, roll it against there, and see if it's shotgun and machine guns on you. If it does, you need to adjust that just a little bit more. I'm just trying to speed up here. Into stroke switches. You don't want your flipper, as this turns, this pulls in and your flipper turns, this arm is what makes that end of stroke switch. It's what tells the computer, my flipper has flipped all the way to its up position. You can cut power to it and go to the hold coil. So you don't want your flipper, as it's going through here, to have to manually push both legs of that all the way around. So it's not going to be adjusted correctly when it's sitting like it is here, because that arm is going to go up to here somewhere, and it'll be forcing the flipper mechanism to not only flip the flipper and kick the ball, but try and bend two pieces of metal at the same time. So you want to take this and bend it, again, close to the stack, back here somewhere, and make it where the flipper mechanism arm doesn't hit that switch until it's almost to the end of its travel, and that it just in the last bit pushes those two contacts together and tells the computer shut off. What's that? Wrap it up? Okay, one more little thing. I get on a slippery slope when I start talking about important switches because they're all important. But if you have a Wizard of Oz game, if you see one out in the wild and you say, I'm not seeing Glinda work, you know, and Glinda's a really big help these days, especially if you're a guy that's as poor a player as I am. You get free, you know, ball letters, you get free rainbow letters, you get free this, and it helps you along quite a bit. Well, the actual switch that activates and sets that light is a very obscure little, what we call a bumper entry rubber switch, and it's right there. It's behind this rubber. So you're hoping that the ball kind of bouncing around or is shot off of here, ricochets, it makes that light up again. You score it, and the ball's going sideways again. It relights that light by hitting this rubber here. Bumper exit lane, if that switch right there doesn't work, you have no haunted scoring. If this spinner switch is not working, you're not going to get any two-ball multi-balls with the crystal ball. Shaker motor in the game, if this little switch over here is not making, you're going to miss a lot of action with the shaker motor because that's one of the ones that actuates the shaker motor. And then this guy down here, a lot of the sounds and video that comes on when there's no place like home, you're trying to make that. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up right there, give it back to Jack.
Thank you, Butch.
Thank you, Butch. So, if I listened to Pat Lawler and we made nothing of a game, Butch would have been done already. So the manual is about 350 pages. I think at this point each page represents 1 pound of what the game weighs. So I advise you not to move the game by yourself. I want to thank everybody. I have a 5 a.m. flight tomorrow back to New Jersey. Jen is getting married in March. It's March now. She's getting married in June. So tomorrow's her wedding shower. I mean, I have a whole house full of company tomorrow. Hopefully, I'll be back in Jersey at noontime. And I think I'll be playing pinball till about 3 in the morning, and I'll just head to the airport. So that's my plan. All right? Everybody, thank you very much, and I appreciate it.